Hi, Joel. It's Thane Maynard.
Hi, Thane. It's a pleasure to talk to you and to be on your show. I remember when the first meeting of Project Passenger Pigeon, or that led to it, was in your office back in April of 2010. So it starts and ends in Cincinnati.
Well, you know, mostly that's because of your perseverance and then also the legacy of Martha. And first off, Joel, congratulations on your book, A Feathered River Across the Sky. A terrific book and surely a labor of a lot of work and a labor of love.
Thank you so much. I've never written anything that's gotten such wonderful attention. All the stories and reviews have been really positive, and they've appeared in, you know, well-known national publications.
Yeah, exactly, and with Diane Reams. But, well, it's a neat thing, and certainly the timing is good. So, first off, tell us a bit about Project Passenger Pigeon.
Well, Project Passenger Pigeon has as its goal to mark the 2014 anniversary of the species extinction, tell people about the story, and then use that story as a portal into consideration of current issues, issues related to extinction, people's connections to nature, and the need to develop sustainable relationships with other species. So we want to use this as a teaching moment because of this unique anniversary.
Now, I know that some listeners may think, now, wait a minute, the passenger pigeon, is that the same as the homing pigeon? But what about the pigeons I see on the square? There's pigeons all over the place. So, Joel, what the heck is up with the passenger pigeon?
Well, pigeons are an order of birds in which there is one family of about 300 or so species. The passenger pigeon was a native bird, unlike any other. The pigeon you see in the cities is a rock pigeon. It's a bird from Europe, semi-domestic, and nothing to do with passenger pigeons. So to get back to this idea that pigeons are a family. Well, think about mammals. Cats are a family, the felines. So to say that all pigeons are alike is to say that your kitty curled up on your sofa is the same as a tiger, is the same as a lion. So not similar really at all.
Exactly. Now, give some perspective on this loss, because we're not talking about an animal that there were a few of or even a few million of.
Certainly the most abundant bird in North America and probably the world. There were no scientific census or surveys done, so we don't know exactly how many there were, but the best guesses are that there were anywhere probably from 3 to 5 billion of them in the eastern half of the United States and Canada. That was their principal range. And another aspect of this abundance is that unlike short-tailed shrews, which are the most abundant mammal in the forest today, these weren't spread out. They weren't cryptic. They sometimes formed aggregations, exceeded a billion birds or more by the people who attempted to calculate it as they flew by. John Audubon at the southern end of your state, in Kentucky, from Henderson to Louisville along the Ohio River, saw a flight that darkened the sky, eclipsed the sun for 3 entire days. It's just hard to even fathom what that would be like.
And my understanding from your book is that in a matter of 50 years, basically the 50 years after the Civil War, they went from abundant to flat out gone.
And yeah, exactly. In 1860, few years actually after that, there was a flight in Ontario. The guy who saw it was a major in the British Army. He didn't give a number to it, but he described it in great detail. Modern scientists, and I've had a couple look at it, making certain assumptions, said that there were anywhere from 2 billion to 3.7 billion birds. Mm. So that's in maybe 1862, 63. The last wild birds were shot, about between 1900 and 1902. So you're right. Just a matter of 4 or 5 decades and the birds were gone.
Mm, mm. Now, of course, you know well the poignant end that they faced, the last of the passenger pigeons. named Martha, died at our zoo at Cincinnati Zoo in 1914.
Well, and that adds to the poignancy. I mean, the idea, so Martha had shared her cage with George, another passenger pigeon. He died in 1911. So for 3 years, Martha was the last of what had been this abundant species. She was probably born in Chicago in the cages managed by a University of Chicago professor. In 1902, she was sent to your zoo and spent the rest of her life there. So she never flew. She never knew the wild. The only travel she ever did was by train and alive. And then after her death, she was on an airplane twice, once to the Smithsonian Institute in D.C. She flew to your zoo once and then flew to Los Angeles once. So, you know, here's a bird that was captive and its whole life and represented the last of this incredible species.
Mm, no kidding. That's something else. You know, when the irony, you think that the only time she flew was on an airplane. Now, you mentioned that the purpose of the Project Passenger Pigeon was more than just honoring the 100 years since extinction, but really seeing that impact and how could we have some impact on current conservation efforts. So tell a bit about that and the insights you've learned both in the writing your book and your decade-long investigation into this.
Sure. I mean, the one way I phrase it is this, that as a cautionary tale to the proposition that no matter how abundant something is, could be water, could be fuel, could be something alive, if we're not careful, if we're not good stewards, we can lose it. There are now 7 billion people on the planet, mm-hmm. and it doesn't take long to squander the riches that we still have. And so the pigeon, to me, just makes this so clear. I mean, nobody thought that it would ever disappear, and yet it did. So really, anything could, and I think that's a really, you know, strong message. It's also, people have said, oh, it's a sad story, and if you end it with her death, it is. But her death, along with the slaughter of the bison and the fight over the use of egrets and terns for hats, decorations, spurred the country's first environmental movement. And out of that came the Lacey Act, came the Migratory Bird Act, laws that still anchor how this country manages its biological resources.
And some species, of course, famously, thanks to those laws and others, have made a comeback here in the last half century. Tell me what, as you've researched this book and also just in as a naturalist, your prognosis for 50 years hence, when we're in the middle of this century, what do you think wild populations will be like?
Well, I mean, I guess I'm not really an optimist, but so in this country where there are laws a robust government, you need government to protect the commons, and migratory birds are that. No one owns them. You know, some sandhill cranes have made a remarkable, you know, recovery. Two other birds that I like to compare, so that the pigeon is an icon of extinction. The Kirtland's warbler breeds in a small part of Michigan mostly. Mm-hmm. We have figured out how to keep that bird healthy. It costs $1 million a year to do it, and so long as we're willing to spend that money, there will be Kirtland's warblers. The whooping crane, we've spent a lot of money and put a lot of effort in for decades, and we still haven't saved it yet. Its fate remains an open question. So, you know, to answer your question, I think some things will do better. Some things will do worse. And that's just looking at the U.S. If you look, the closest analog to what happened to the passenger pigeon, I think, in today's world is what's going on with tuna, shark, and fish in the open seas. People are exploiting that to the point where these populations are plummeting, and it's for the same reason. There's no sovereign that can dictate what can be taken and when. So it's going to require cooperation, and it's kind of hard to see where that cooperation's coming from. Although, you know, we did it with whales. So it's not impossible, I suppose, people can say, you know, we need to preserve the oceans.
That's right. Some whale species are staging a comeback, such as the eastern population of the gray whale, called the California gray whale to us, by putting on a moratorium, protecting them from hunting. They're back at their carrying capacity, while the western population that swims along Japan are still exploited and in much lower numbers.
Well, that's a wonderful example, because you're looking at the same species and seeing how it's faring under two different regimens of protection, quote unquote.
Well, Joel, I appreciate you taking a few minutes with us. I know you've got to be excited by the reception your book's receiving, and I'm hoping here in our anniversary year we get you out to Cincinnati.
Well, I hope to be there around the anniversary itself. So thank you so much, Thane. You've been so supportive throughout this whole process.
Heck yeah. Take care.
Okay, bye.
My guest has been naturalist Joel Greenberg, author of the new book, A Feathered River Across the Sky. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.